Tri-County Contracting, worry-free roofing, siding, and windows. To sign up for a free estimate, get info on their worry-free roof tune-up or their free yearly roof inspections, or to get an instant roof quote, visit them online at tricountycontractingwi.com.
Your chances already are infinitesimal.
Well, they always say that the next trillionaire or the very first trillionaire is going to be Elon Musk. No, it's going to be Al from Cudahy.
Who was over at the Quick Trip there and got himself the super play.
We should always point out the odds are very low.
You're more likely to go to the ER for a pogo stick related injury or become the president of the United States.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Petrano.
A message from the Tampa Bay mayor.
You're going to die.
You're going to die, she says. We'll get to that here in a second. But first, in Florida, bumper-to-bumper traffic.
We actually took 8 hours just to get out of the state of Florida. So the first 60 miles, it took us 4.5 hours to go 60 miles.
That woman talking to ABC as people evacuate ahead of Hurricane Milton.
Are they going north or south, I'm wondering?
I'm guessing north.
Yeah, everybody's going that way because it looks like the path is going to whack the entire, eastern side of the peninsula.
CBN News' Kristen Benavidez is in St. Beach, Florida, where preparations are underway ahead of the hurricane.
Strong winds and waves battered Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula overnight as Hurricane Milton barrels towards Florida's west coast.
If they have called for your evacuation order, I beg you, I implore you to evacuate.
Heavy highway traffic Monday showed that many Floridians are heeding those warnings, with a deadly storm surge as high as 15 feet forecast for some areas.
15 feet, so remember that number. Milton becoming the strongest hurricane in the Gulf in nearly two decades, expected to make landfall early Thursday near Tampa Bay with up to 15 inches of rain possible. 3 million people live in the Tampa area. They could potentially see this 15-foot storm surge. Now, don't forget, less than 2 weeks ago, Hurricane Helene flooded Tampa Bay with a record storm surge. Milton is poised to up the ante significantly. Could double what Helene had unleashed.
Yeah, they're in terms of storm surge, right?
Yes.
So like twice the amount of water
you're
coming
talking
in.
15 feet potentially. You're talking about counties underwater.
Anyone who was born and raised in the Tampa Bay area has never seen anything like this before. People need to get out.
That is the mayor of Tampa, Jane Castor. She was on CNN on Monday night, and she says if the models are accurate, if the models go the way they currently suggest, it's going to be catastrophic.
I can say without any dramatization whatsoever, if you choose to stay in one of those evacuation areas, you're going to die.
You're going to die, she says, if you do not evacuate from some of the areas that they're calling for evacuations.
I feel for these officials because they're working off the models that they have. They're working on the best predictive information.
Right.
But not that you want that to be the case, but also if it doesn't materialize as strong as they thought, if folks do survive, if they're like, it wasn't that bad, it just hurts you next time when you say you have to get out. Like I feel with how people wrestle with that because sometimes dire predictions are made and they don't come to fruition.
See, I think in these cases, they'd rather be wrong and have you leave than say, oh, don't worry about it. And then they lose people. But yeah, it's going to be a trek getting out of there again. Milton expected to hit the Tampa area early Thursday.
Sports coming up next on Wisconsin's Morning News.
Time for an update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All Sports Desk.
So what's up with Romeo Doubs? Packers have their off day today. Third-year wide receiver suspended, missed last week's game. Had a meeting with Packers head coach Matt LaFleur on Monday. Coach, what was it all about?
I think with all due respect to everything, I appreciate your question. I'd rather, you know, what's done is done, and we're moving forward. And, you know, I expect us collectively as a team to continue to move that way.
Now, Matt LaFleur may be a football coach, but he is also a manager in a workplace.
Yep, yep.
And that sounded just like your boss at the company meeting, didn't it? Listen, we're not going to get into it. We're going to move forward. It's important that we as a team, we come together, we do this. We're, Not looking back.
He did a nice job.
That's fine, right? Good. Yeah. He could be your boss, right, at wherever you work.
Mm-hmm.
The report originally from Sports Illustrated that suggested Dobbs was upset that he wasn't getting enough action seems to be holding up. And E, you'll recall, I predicted this. Now, Eric had the fun prediction, which is also bearing itself out, that safety Xavier McKinney would have 10 picks this year.
We're getting there.
It's 5 for 5. But I worried, even in training camp, I brought it up. You got a bunch of wide receivers, all relatively young, all at about the same level of talent. Some guys a little better than others, whatever. You got a young quarterback, diverse offense. They do a lot of different things. Was there going to be some chirping, some trouble about who's getting the touches, who gets to eat?
In regards to trying to get everybody involved, I mean, it's a good problem to have, but it can potentially be a problem if you let it be.
Yeah, good problem to have, but it can be a problem, and it was already this past week. I think that much is pretty clear. Will it be a problem this week or next week or week 17? That remains to be seen. Probably a lot of it has to do with whether or not we're winning. Because it's all good when you're winning.
Of course.
Right. Yep. Dobbs expected to return to practice tomorrow. Packers have the Cardinals at noon on Sunday.
Monday Night Football. Chiefs, Saints, Arrowhead in KC. And what's happening in the crowd? Let's go Royals.
That's right. The Royals are.
So the Royals were playing the Yankees in New York. The Royals, by the way, haven't been home in 2 weeks. They're coming home now, but they beat the Yankees last night 4-2. Mahomes said they noticed it on the field, like they were kind of like, okay, Royals must be doing well. So the Chiefs win as well. They beat the Saints 26-13. After the game, Mahomes says he's hoping to go to game 3, the Royals game, when they play the Yankees there in KC. But he says they're on their bye week and got to figure out a schedule with his wife.
That's the plan. I got to just, it's bye week, so Brittany's vacation and me getting to the Royals game, we'll feud for sure.
Figure out who gets to do what.
This cat gets 1 week off in like 6 months. Can you imagine that conversation?
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry.
So honey, what I'm going to do is I'm going to the ball game tonight with the guys.
No, you're not. You're taking the kids for a minute.
Absolutely not.
The other game was the Tigers and Guardians. Tigers won on a 3-run home run in the 9th inning. So every DS, every divisional series right now is tied at 1 apiece.
And then on Sunday we're golfing, and then probably won't be home then because some of the guys want to stay over.
Here are the kids. Here's a diaper you can change.
6:19 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
I noticed you didn't tell me happy anniversary.
Oh, all right. You and Ange?
No, we already had ours.
Okay, this is a trick question. What is happening?
Actually, it's more of my diaversary. I have been diagnosed and living with type 1 diabetes for 40 years.
But you remember the date that you
years.
Found out.
Yep.
No kidding.
Yeah. So how about that, huh?
Okay. Well, happy anniversary? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I always laugh about that. I'm never quite sure whether or not you say that to somebody.
Like I think in the business we say we mark this occasion.
Right? 40
years, when it's an unpleasant anniversary.
Right. Well, yeah, but pleasant in the way of obviously you can live, you know, very
you
well in type 1 diabetes. Obviously, anyone who is listening to the show has heard us talk about T1D before, as it's called. Very different disease than diabetes type 2. And type 1 is a big deal for me, and obviously in October it is because of the big walk. We have a breakthrough T1D walk coming up in a couple of weeks that I'll share more details about. But I wanted to tell you the story of Anna Terrapin, a Pewaukee High School senior playing basketball and also living with type 1 diabetes. Anna Terrapin loves basketball.
I just like the adrenaline of the game. I love the team aspect of it.
She's been playing essentially all her life.
I was dribbling the basketball before I could walk. I just fell in love with it from the moment I stepped in the gym. And then once I could play, I was like, I love this even more.
And she plays while living with type 1 diabetes.
I was a little nervous, a little like scared of what the future will look like, if I was being honest.
Anna was diagnosed with T1D in the spring of 2023. In fact, it happened while she was on a recruiting trip for college.
I was just not feeling so well. So my mom took me into a walk-in clinic, and before you know it, they took my blood sugar, and it was 647, and the rest was history.
You see, a normal blood sugar is 80. Anna's was more than 600.
I was just nervous because you don't really know. Like, we didn't really know anything of T1D. I just wanted to get home when I found out. Like, I didn't want to stay in the hospital.
T1D is an autoimmune disease. The pancreas can no longer produce insulin, which controls sugar levels in your body. Therefore, someone with T1D needs to control their blood sugar at all times, 24 hours a day. A blood sugar too low can mean seizures, falling unconscious, comas, or even worse. And a blood sugar too high can lead to catastrophic issues inside your body, like organ failure or even a loss of limbs.
A lot of questions filled my head when I found out, so just all like those feelings and thoughts were just racing through my head.
How'd your parents take it? Were they doing okay?
Yeah, they were hanging in there. I could tell they were trying to be strong for me because I was a mess, but it was a lot of tears and emotions running through them, but they held strong for the most part.
And for Anna, what would it mean for her favorite pastime?
My biggest question was if I would ever be able to play basketball again and at a high level, and then thinking of college, how that would look like.
But this plucky teenager has figured it out. Takes a lot of discipline and management and technology, but Anna is succeeding, both on and off the court.
We came back home and got all the training and all the things here connected to children's, and we've been thriving ever since.
Anna wears a continuous glucose monitor, which measures her blood sugar in real time. She also wears an insulin pump, which provides her life-saving medication 24 hours a day.
If you think about finding a cure, that's the first step, is getting on a CGM and insulin pump, because it makes your life so much easier with T1D. It's really life-changing.
And how are you feeling? You feeling good? You feeling like you have control of everything?
Yes. Every day is different, you know, and keeping an open mind, positive attitude always helps. But it's going well. It's adjustment to go back to school, I'll tell you that. Every year's different. But just having that good community and support system is really key to helping me succeed every day with my T1D.
And as far as basketball goes,
it's super exciting that my sister and I can play together at Michigan State, so we're super excited.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's pretty awesome. That's right. Both Anna and her twin sister, Amy, are joining the Spartans.
Diabetes refuses to stick to its scripts. A lot more patience, practice, perseverance, preparation, that all goes into it. But if you have a great support system, a great community, you can actually manage it and control it.
Could not have been more impressed with Anna.
I always am. All these stories that you share with us.
What a great kid. Yeah, it's different. It's a different life, but you can do it. You gotta be motivated. You have to be disciplined, and she certainly is. Honored to be emceeing the Breakthrough T1D Walk in a couple of weeks at Greenfield Park, and I have a link to that. And if you'd like to learn more about Anna, just text the word WALK, WALK, to 855-616-1620. We'll send you all the information. We'd love to have you out there, obviously raising money for a cause to help cure or prevent T1D, so any little bit would always be appreciated. So thank you very much.
You know who else wasn't surprised? Xavier McKinney. That story coming up in sports at 6:45.
You ever buy a Mega Millions ticket?
I suppose I have, right? That's the one that's much like Powerball.
Like outside of just being afraid of being the only guy in the office who didn't win.
I have a legitimate fear of that. That someday the pool will pass me by. You know,
right.
You pool, right? Everybody at work throws
you're
in.
You're the only one I worked the next day.
I'll have
day.
Been out, or I was gone, or I left early, or whatever, and I didn't buy in.
Well,
legitimate fear in life.
When Greg comes walking around asking for you to cough up for the office pool, he's going to be asking for a little bit more now.
Mega Millions lotto tickets are $2 now. But that changes in April, when they'll jump to $5 a ticket. Lotto officials say the changes will lead to more jackpot odds, more frequent giant prizes, and larger payouts. Mega Millions will introduce the changes at a time when fewer people are buying lotto tickets. As for Powerball, officials there say that game will remain at $2 a ticket. Matt Piper, CBS News.
$5 is a lot.
Yeah, that's a big step.
I mean, $2, you can, I don't know. All right, I guess.
Because now you have fewer chances, right?
Right, yes. Yeah, well, you're buying less, but it sounds like the money will be more. You know,
sure, but that's
200 million, 300 million.
Right, that's an irrelevancy, right? 400 million or 500 million. Like, I don't know. These numbers are astronomical. So what I really want is more chances, more opportunities to win, because your chances already are infinitesimal.
Well, they always say that the next trillionaire or the very first trillionaire is going to be Elon Musk. No, it's going to be Al from Cudahy.
Who was over at the Quick Trip there and got himself the super play.
We should always point out the odds are very low.
You're more likely to go to the ER for a pogo stick related injury or become the president of the United States.
Just remember that when you buy your $5 lotto ticket.
Still remember the last time I was in charge of organizing our thing, right? Like, for whatever reason, we didn't have an office. I'm like, all right, fine, I'll do it. Everybody, you know, give me your $2, whatever. We're like, yeah, you got Venmo? Not taking Venmos from all of you. Give me your $2 or you're out. 6:39 on Wisconsin's Morning News. At 6:43, today in the Middle East, Israel fighting a war on two fronts, operations in Gaza to finish off Hamas, and to the north, Hezbollah, ground operations there. Even on Monday, October 7th, a somber day, the anniversary of the attack by Hamas that included the rape, murder, and capture of Israelis, some of whom are still hostages.
Nearly 100 hostages still being held, one of them, American Keith Siegel. He was kidnapped along with his wife, Aviva. She was released in November. She tells us the torture of knowing her husband is still being held.
When you think about Keith still being in, likely, a tunnel.
I'm finished. It's just the worst thing to handle.
And with no end in sight to the war, more than 41,000 dead in Gaza, according to the Hamas-run health ministry.
It's ABC's Matt Gutman. You know that last part, the humanitarian toll in Gaza. Touching off more pro-Palestinian demonstrations. This is from a massive march on Columbia University in New York. That, of course, you remember, was ground zero for the demonstrations.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the encampments that cropped up last spring at universities across the country, including in Wisconsin, UWM, and Madison. Demands for a ceasefire. Their point is the Palestinian people are suffering, unrelated necessarily to the acts of Hamas. Gaza is in ruins, and yet military action continues. Israel's point is, well, they still have hostages. It's not done. Hamas still exists. So I thought it was an interesting point in our conversation here on the program Monday. We had Mark Shapiro in studio. He's president and CEO of the Jewish Community Center, friend of the program. He shared a number of reflections on the day. And you and I both had the same takeaway of what really stood out in all the things that we talked about is as it relates to the current state of affairs.
Right.
Mark made the point on the protests and on what's being asked of Israel as they try to root out terrorists.
There was a peace plan in place. There was a ceasefire. Everyone keeps talking about there being a need for a ceasefire. There was one. It was on October 6th.
So I'm not aware of any major military action from overnight. Seems relatively quiet. Remember, lingering out there still, though, is whether Israel responds more directly to that missile attack from Iran. We talked all about, you know, what is the response going to be? What is the response? Is it going to be, what do they call it, proportional? Or is it going to elevate? Haven't really seen anything.
Whatever it is, we'll know that it's the response. It's not going to go hidden in darkness. We'll know when it happens.
So that lingers out there on this October 8th. 6:45, sports up next.
Time for an update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All Sports Desk.
Packers and Cardinals this week. Headlines in Green Bay include Romeo Doubs coming off suspension, expected to practice tomorrow. Also, we know Eric Bold Predictions Bilstead was not surprised that safety Xavier McKinney has 5 interceptions in his first 5 games.
Yep.
In fact, you predicted he would have 10 picks on the season, right?
We're getting there. Not there yet, but we're getting there.
Yeah, well, it's week 6 coming up. You know who else is not surprised? Xavier McKinney.
Would you thought I was crazy? I mean, what would you have thought of that?
No, I wouldn't have thought it was crazy at all. You know, I went into the season, I'm on a mission, and, you know, that mission doesn't stop until we play our last game.
So what he said next was, I'm on a mission to get exactly 10 picks. No.
That was sweet.
Packers writer for USA Today, Rick Wood. He's covered the Packers for many years, asking McKinney, look, if I had predicted before the season you'd have 5-5, would you have thought I was crazy? So He said, obviously, no. Eve, I bet if we asked him, would you have found the 10-pick prediction crazy, he'd say only 10.
You're right. Only 10? What? Right. Yeah. Come on.
So there was this other issue on Eric's prediction. Eric was texting during the game, seeming to suggest that McKinney's fumble recovery might count toward...
A little something-something?
Do I get something? What was the text? Did that count?
Yeah, does that count as anything? That's what Greg was asking.
I ruled no, it has to be a pick. You know who else agrees with that? Xavier McKinney.
Would you have counted it if you just didn't have the pick, just the fumble? Would have been a takeaway streak?
No.
You needed the pick?
Yeah, we needed a pick. Yeah, we needed a pick. So, like I said, I should have had another one, but we'll get back to it.
We'll get back to it. I love this guy. I love this guy. Everything about him, how he carries himself, how he does business, how he intercepts footballs.
It's easy to root for him, that's for sure.
Goes for 6 straight games with an interception at noon Sunday against the Cardinals.
Monday Night Football, the Chiefs beat the Saints 26-13. My timeline was dominated last night with people from KC showing 2 TVs next to each other. One showing the Chiefs game, the other one showing the game 2 of the ALDS between their Royals and the Yankees, which the Royals would go on to win 4-2. Boy, it must be nice to be a KC fan right now. Everything going good. Even the coach after the game giving a shout out to KC.
They're the Royals. My hat goes off to Matt for the job he did there with his crew, and they got their playoff win against a pretty good Yankee team. So, impressive.
Andy Reid there. So
can you see Reid on the sideline with his phone? He's kind of watching, like, run whatever we talked about last week.
There are tons of pictures of that, of people watching. Yeah, just go ahead.
Yes.
Run it again.
Whatever we talked about. Don't I have an offensive coordinator?
And the Royals, meanwhile, after beating the Yankees in Game 2, now return home for the first time in 2 weeks. They haven't been home because they clinched and then they had to zip up to New York for the last several days. So now they come home and play Game 3.
Siding Unlimited, WTMJ News Time, 6:50. One of the most uncomfortable places I have ever, and still on occasion may still work, where I do my news gathering, right, E? So we have an office, we have a studio, but we also go out in the universe to do our jobs. That would be covering sports and getting sound, as we call it, interviews with and around dozens of half-naked people in a locker room or a clubhouse.
All sweaty and stinky sometimes.
This is what sports journalists do with regularity across sports. After practice or after the game, credentialed reporters are led into the locker room to do these interviews that you hear, that we play. The NFL Players Association is trying to change that, and it's an interesting question as we bring in friend of the program and 2-time sports writer of the year, Lori Nicol. First, Lori, can you talk about what's the play here from the NFLPA, why this is an issue now, if not before, and then we'll get into what we think about all that.
From what I understand, there was a background, like somebody was filming and doing a shoot, interviewing a player, and in the background there was somebody who was either not fully clothed or whatever, and that does... That's on 3 people. That's on the athletes, but most importantly, that's on public relations and that's on the media people. You have to, you know, be respectful and be aware. But it is tough. It is, you know, especially in football, there's so many athletes. But also in football, it's the biggest locker room that you'll find in sports. So there is room to move around and be respectful. There should never be a live shot coming from the locker room. And also, I know when I've done editing, I don't just write or take pictures. I also shoot video myself. I have cropped things, or I have just, we call it a kill. I just kill stuff. Like, nope, this is too on the border. I will take it out. So I think that was the main issue, was somebody was, and that I've seen that before. People have been in the background of my photos before with me in the photo, so it can be an issue occasionally.
It's always been interesting to me when I was first introduced to this practice as a very young reporter. Man, I was covering the Packers. I remember watching Reggie White. And like some of the young guys, they don't care. They really don't care. They don't care who's around. They don't care how naked they are or whatever. And then other guys, like I think of a Reggie White. I saw Reggie duck back into the showers one time because there were people around and he was just uncomfortable. You know, he's a bigger guy and he didn't want to be out there in that environment. Each one of these players is an individual and some are more comfortable than others with the whole idea of all these folks being around and recording video.
Yeah, and Reggie once even told me, I don't want you here. Yeah, that was my introduction to Reggie White.
Well, that's interesting, too.
Because you're a female.
Yeah, it was only the mid-'80s when women were first allowed in the locker room, right?
Right. And then when I was in college, it was a huge controversy. And, you know, my first locker room experience is absolutely horrible. It was traumatizing. I got yelled at and screamed at. I was treated terribly. It would be harassment now. And I'll tell you that this is a problem that could be solved so easily. But for one thing, the way things are scheduled, just so that people understand, I do 4.5 hour commute to Green Bay to go to a 35-minute open locker room. But if you think I have 35 full minutes to interview athletes, that is also not correct, because the media locker room that by rule has to be open that amount of time, it means athletes are coming in from practice. They need to eat within an hour. They need to get their protein for recovery, so they need to get food. A lot of them go to the training room to get, you know, stretched, or the trainer works on sore muscles. Others are doing hot tub, cold tub. Others are going into the sauna. And then they might shower quick and throw on shorts and a T-shirt. And by the way, I will not talk to an athlete unless they have shorts and a T-shirt on. That's just my personal policy after things that I've seen and experienced in my career. And then they have to rush off to meetings. So a lot of times that 35 minutes where I'm trying to interview a player who's not as famous as Jordan Love, say I'm trying to talk to a safety or a fullback or something like that, I might get 6 minutes after all of that. So it's not like it's this giant free-for-all. That's the first point, is that it's a lot of waiting for a very short time. The second point is that players have been asked many times, what do you want? How do you want to do this? And for their convenience, they say they want to do this in the locker room because they don't want to go to a separate designated interview room. They want to do their thing and move on with their day. Whereas if they are getting requests from media, then they've got to go, and it's more time consuming. So players have, throughout the history, throughout all of the sports, said this is the setup that they want. So stop making the media the enemy all the time. I'm really, really tired of it. We are just trying to do our jobs. And a lot of times, the third thing I'd like to mention is for those people who don't follow sports through Journal Sentinel or through 620 Radio, if they're doing it on social media, on TikTok or Instagram or Twitter, those sound bites that you're getting, those are generated by questions from the media, from those of us who ask questions, who think of angles. It's not just a player coming up with these clever things or these great introspective things. It's coming from us media people asking these questions, and that's where you're getting some of your answers. So demonizing the media, I'm over it. I'm so done.
You're the worst, Nickel.
I know.
Always appreciate you. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, guys. Sorry for being so mean. I'm really sorry.